Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Second Take. My name is Ryan, and I'm here with Roland. And just a quick overview of our little setup today. Today, we're going to be talking about the MVP conversation. Over 60 games into the NBA season, it's about time we talk about the MVP, who we think has a chance to win. Following that, we're going to move on to the Minnesota Timberwolves, big injury news with Karl-Anthony Towns. And what can Minnesota really do now that Towns is hurt? And if he comes back, do they still have a chance to win a chip? Listen and find out. And lastly, we're going to move on to a surprise team of the NBA season who is accelerated ahead of their leaderboard in the Orlando Magic. And so without further ado, let's go ahead and get started with the MVP conversation with our MVP candidates. Roland, who are your favorite candidates for the MVP race this season?
Well, there are two. I think you agree with me here. They're both out west, and Nikola Jokic and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. As far as my pick, this is more of a choice that I would like to see rather than I feel like who is more deserving, because we all know Nikola Jokic is the best basketball player in the NBA currently right now. He's the most impactful, one of the most talented offensive engines we've seen in basketball history. And if the award always went to the best player in the NBA, Jokic would win this award this season. Probably would have won it last year, would have had a chance at a four-peat, whatever. But the case for SGA is pretty simple. He currently is the most productive two-way player in the NBA, right? He averages 31 a game. You know, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, but he also averages 2 steals and a block. He truly does load up the stat sheet on both sides. And that's what I feel like could give him the edge over Jokic, even though Jokic, you know, it's just more of the same from him. And I feel like fatigue is a real issue in this award, even though I think that's rather idiotic of the NBA press. However, SGA is definitely probably my front runner at this point, just factoring in voter fatigue.
Yeah, you brought up a couple of really good points. Jokic is the best player in the NBA. So far, we've kind of seen voters fatigue, kind of not with him. You know, they finally were like, here, Embiid, take your MVP last season. But he did have a good year. But Jokic, definitely best player in the NBA. No question about that. My biggest thing with Denver and Jokic is they do tend to take their foot off the gas sometimes in the regular season. MVP is a regular season award. They're still really good, but they know what their long-term goal is. They know the playoffs matter. They know they're trying to win a ring. So every once in a while, they're not showing up to their games like maybe we know they're capable of. I mean, Jokic is almost averaging a triple-double, and he does have better defense than he gets credit for. But on the other hand, Shai, he's been a super consistent star for a really young team. He doesn't have the same type of pieces around him at this point. You know, Chet has helped that team a lot, but
yeah,
nothing too crazy like Denver yet, keyword. But his defense, like you said, really good defender. He's gotten a lot better as a defender. His positional size really helps that. And, you know, I know you were a big fan of this team coming into this season, but they've been even better than I think you expected them to be. And yeah, just being at the top of the West right now, and Shai is a big part of that, whereas the Nuggets are kind of exactly what we thought they would be. And for that reason, I like to give it to Shai just because of the expectations they have surpassed and the type of consistency he has shown in being the leader for that team. I like Shai as being the more impactful player to his current team. We know Jokic has a huge impact, right? No one's going to argue that. But for this regular season award, I like Shai as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that, man. Team that's exceeding expectations, even though they were rather high coming into this year. Like I said, I pictured them as a top three seed in the West. And I said that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because of that, would be a top three MVP candidate. And I did not think he'd be the front runner. I didn't think they'd be the number one seed in the West, even though really they're only separated by a half game between Denver and Minnesota. It's going to be a tight race to the end. So really these last 15 games could decide who wins the award, because I think it's that close, right? If you wanted to play it safe and you wanted to say, hey, best player in the world, he's deserving of it, go Nikola Jokic. If you want to give it to the new kid on the block in Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, I wouldn't be mad either way. The issue here is if Shea won the award, or looking at it from a voter, you know, I'm not a voter. I'm not one of those prized individuals that's supposed to know everything about basketball, even though, you know, what do they really know? But he has not proven really anything in the playoffs. We've seen him a handful of times. He's never been the number one option in a playoff series for his team, right? Back in the bubble, Chris Paul was the leader of that team. Back when they played the Warriors, when he was on the Clippers, you know, he was really young. So giving it to Shea before we've seen him in the playoffs, you know, could be a turnoff for some voters. That's all I'm trying to say. Not that that should matter, because again, this is a regular season award. But I feel like a lot of the voters will sway in Jokic's favor simply because he's coming off of, you know, a finals run.
Yeah, and I want to touch on a little more of a point you made just now is a lot can change to end the season, right? We have 3-4 teams in the West really fighting for that one seed, and it's going up and down. And, you know, maybe one team ends the year on a 10-game winning streak and someone loses 5 in a row, and then it makes the, you know, like maybe it's the Thunder who fall off and the Nuggets rise, then that might make voting a little easier for some people. But is the NBA no longer about the best player on the best team for MVP? Because I feel like the best player on the best team hasn't won in a while. And if that were the case, Tatum would be getting more consideration than he currently is.
Tatum, the reason why he's kind of fell out of the race was his play as of late. Past couple of weeks, he hasn't played very well. Plain as simple as that. The best player to the best team award, it's interesting because I think a large part in why that isn't the case anymore, or as at least as much as it was in the past, was because of the, you know, the Michael Jordan winning 5 of them, the LeBron winning 4 of them, you know. At some point, they're typically the best player on the best team, and they're typically the best players in the world. At some point, I feel like the NBA has just kind of been like, let's give it to somebody else. It's more of a, what have you done spectacular? You know, Jokic, when he won the MVP, well, back-to-back, it was the two most highest offensive ratings we've ever seen, right? Steph Curry, best player on the best team award, first time around. Second time around, kind of the same deal, but he made almost 500 three-pointers, you know? Never been done before. Russell Westbrook, triple-double. James Harden, 36 and 11. You know what I mean? The awards turned into more of, okay, do you have a top 4, top 5 seed in the playoffs? And are you doing something that is unprecedented? Mm-hmm. That's kind of more rather than, oh, you know, let's give it to Jason Tatum, who's having a good season, nowhere near what Shea or Jokic is putting on. So I think that's the thing, is it's not a team award. So why should it be that way?
Fair enough. And, you know, speaking of a team that's really good but doesn't have what we would be considered, we would consider an MVP candidate, are the Minnesota Timberwolves. They've been atop of the West most of the season, you know, fluctuating a little bit between 1 and 2, depending on the week. But recently, Karl Anthony Towns tore his meniscus. It's been reported he's out at least a month at the minimum, which would mean he would be back in time for the playoffs. We'll see if that timeline does stand or not. But with this injury especially, and if Minnesota goes into a first-round series without Karl Anthony Towns, do you think they have a chance to still win that first-round series?
dude, I don't know. All season long, the Timberwolves have been a team I just honestly can't really get a read on. You know, they're on one hand, they're the best defensive team in the NBA. Okay, first in points allowed, only allowing 106.6 per game. And they have the best field goal opponent field goal percentage. Only teams are only shooting about 44% when they play Minnesota. So this comes to no surprise, right? McDaniels scoffing the perimeter. Edwards, a good defensive player when he chooses to be. And Rudy, of course, in the paint, protecting. He's a walking top 10 defense no matter what he does, right? They also have a superstar offensive player in Anthony Edwards who can create his own shot, and they have a really veteran supporting cast around him. Floor general and Mike Conley, you know, they have the pieces to be a very successful playoff team. As you spoke, Karl-Anthony Towns recently underwent surgery. He's supposed to miss a month. We'll honestly see how long the recovery process is going to be. Bigs and knees are two things that don't go together, right? Yeah. So we'll see about that. I honestly am not a believer in this team because they remind me of the 2020-2021 Utah Jazz. It pains me to say that as a Jazz fan, but they're almost identical, right? They were, the Jazz got the number one seed around a superstar two guard in Donovan Mitchell with the same point guard alongside of him, Mike Conley, and Rudy Gobert. It's the same team as the 2021 Utah Jazz. So, first round, I think they should be favored. I don't think it's a lock. I don't see this team getting past the second round.
Yeah, I mean, so speaking of what they're looking like post-cat, I mean, for Minnesota at least, this is probably the worst time and the worst type of player to get this injury because this is the best chance they've had to win a chip since they've had Kevin Garnett. So it's been a long time, and this is the run that you want to be healthy for. So speaking to their chances, I mean, they have a great defense already, and their defense honestly is better with Naz Reid next to Gobert. Those two have played really, really well together on the court. Because Naz Reid's a better defender than Karl-Anthony Towns. But the problem is Cat's the team's second best offensive player. And there's a huge, huge drop off between number two and number three. It's like kind of falling off a cliff. So for this team, my biggest concern is their offense and if they're going to be able to score the ball without Cat, because we know Ant can get his, but are you going to want to rely on, you know, a 40-year-old Mike Conley? Do you want to rely on Rudy Gobert to have to score? Do you want to have to rely on Kyle Anderson or Jaden McDaniels? I don't really think they can. So as you mentioned, I still think they should be favored in the first round just because we know the problems that some of these play-in teams have. You know, Sacramento gets there. They play no defense. Everyone can score on them. The Lakers are just up and down and all over the place. Don't really trust them. Same with Golden State. Don't really trust that team despite their top end player. It's like the rest of their roster is super shaky. And, you know, Minnesota still has a chance. Without Cat, they're not going past the second round of the playoffs, though. It's a 0% chance, in my opinion, unless they freaking Naz Reid becomes Cat somehow. I mean, he's like a lesser version of Cat anyways. But with Cat healthy, I do think they have a chance. I really do think they have a chance to win. A lot will depend on how Cat and Edwards play in the playoffs because Cat does have a history of not really showing up. But this team has a chance, especially depending on matchups and who they play. I know they play Denver very well. They were probably Denver's toughest matchup last year as the 8 seed. To be determined there, but I don't think without Cat, they don't have a chance at all. Their offense just isn't there. And we know Minnesota needs to address, you know, a little bit of those offensive issues in the offseason, regardless of what happens this year.
Okay, so let's play into this hypothetical world that we're building. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say Karl-Anthony Towns misses the first round of the playoffs. That seems like a pretty likely possibility, especially with getting a surgery on his meniscus. I mean, a month, that seems a little short from what we've seen in the past. Right now, let's say the standings stayed exactly the way they were, the Lakers and the Warriors would miss the playoffs, which I think they beat Dallas in a play-in. So, but hypothetically, they're out. They would match up with the Phoenix Suns in the first round. Are you taking the Timberwolves over Phoenix?
You know, that's probably the one team in Phoenix that I would pick to beat them out of all those potential play-in teams.
Exactly.
Would be Phoenix, because I picked them over Golden State, LA, Sacramento, Dallas, but then you get to Phoenix and I'm like, you know, like I said, I just don't think that team has the firepower to keep up with a team like Phoenix, bearing Phoenix has all three of their stars. If Phoenix only has two of the guys, if Phoenix only has two of those guys, which they have basically all year, I would pick Minnesota. But if they have all three of those guys, give me Phoenix, man.
A healthy Phoenix team upsets a injured Timberwolves team. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And that, and it honestly, it just plays to the fact that I just could never get a real read on this team. They feel a lot like the 2021 Utah Jazz, the Memphis Grizzlies of last year, you know, a young team that kind of exceeded expectations. And, well, they're not really a young team, but a team that exceeded expectations from where they were last year. And they'll probably get got, being the cat is injured now.
I think a lot of it, too, has to do with the fact that we've never seen them make a run before, because I feel like the trend with teams usually is, okay, they're on their come up, right? They had a good year. They either lost in the first or second round, and then they come back the next year, and that's when they make their jump, right? Like, these teams are making progressive steps forward. We've just never seen them get out of the first round of the playoffs since they've had Kevin Garnett, and that's probably the biggest stain that we feel, at least looking at and watching this team, is it's like, okay, they look good. The eye test looks good. They play good against good teams. They're at the top of a very good Western Conference, but we haven't really seen them do anything in the playoffs to give us that belief that they can at least win in the first two rounds and give themselves a chance.
We also haven't had this much parity in the West. I mean, the West has always historically been like, holy crap, it's just crazy competitive. The last two seasons in particular, the mere fact that the Lakers made it to the conference finals as a seventh seed. Last year, the Heat made it to the finals as an eighth seed, right? The NBA has so much parity because of the talent. I don't think it's ever been closer in terms of the talent pool. Like, every team has somebody to watch. Every team has something to like throw their hat in the name for as a contender. Right. There's been one team all year this season, and it's been Boston, that has honestly been better than pretty much everyone else.
Yep.
However, as far as the West goes, there hasn't been a team that's been head and shoulders above really anyone, one through six. It's crazy.
Yep. Yeah, the difference between 1 and 8 in the West is closer than the difference between 1 and 2 in the East. And Cleveland's been good. Cleveland would be competing for that one seed in the West. And it's like, Boston's just been that much better than everyone. And if everyone's as good as everyone, matchups will matter a lot more than they normally do, because the talent is so evenly spread.
So Minnesota, hopefully they get lucky and play like a Golden State or a team, or Sacramento, where missing Towns won't hurt them as bad, because those teams' defense is so terrible. It's a layup line, right? But a team like Phoenix, even though they're not the best defensive team, I'm more afraid of Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and a healthy Bradley Beal trio torching up my defense, because let's be honest, the NBA is about offense now. And if I think they would have a hard time keeping up with that team in particular, but we'll see.
Yeah. And speaking of how far we think teams will get in the playoffs, a team that's really been a surprise and accelerated their timeline greatly this season has been the Orlando Magic. And they have one of the, honestly, I think most underrated young players in the NBA. Honestly, both of their young stars are underrated. Paolo Banchero was the first overall pick, had a great rookie year. All-star second-year player, got a lot better. No one talks about him. Nope. Franz Wagner is averaging over 20 points per game as his number two guy at the small forward position. No one talks about him either. And Orlando's got as high as the four seed. I think they're currently like five or six in that range, but definitely fighting for that home court advantage spot. Do you think in this Eastern Conference, Orlando has a chance to advance in the playoffs?
I really do.
Yeah.
It's they're most likely going to match up with the Knicks. So that series is going to be a slugfest of 90 to 94. Let's go back to the 90s type game, right? The case for Orlando is their defense. They remind me a lot of Minnesota. Okay. They are currently the third in points allowed per game at 109.4. First in rebounds. This is their team's strength. Nobody can rebound against this team. They average almost 50 rebounds a game. Fourth in steals at 8 per game. And they are fourth in turnovers forced. So teams really have a hard time getting things going on the offensive side of the ball against the Magic, which is really surprising because they're such a young team, right? Normally, young teams are terrible on the defensive side of the ball. They're just awful. But this team is just long everywhere. Every position, they're oversized, which helps them on the defensive side of the ball. But on offense, they really lack any sense of spacing. They're dead last in 3 points made per game at 11. They make 11 threes a game, which is dead last. They're 26th in three-point percentage, which is they're around 35%. And a lot of their shot diet comes from attacking the paint and settling for mid-range jumpers. So my biggest concern for them in a playoff series, when things get tight, will they actually be able to score enough? Now, I think, funnily enough, the Knicks have similar vibes where they play a slower pace. They allow for teams that they really want to slow teams down to their pace of play. And I think that could play well into the Magic's kind of game plan because they're a slow and steady wins the race type of team, and they really just hound you on defense.
Yeah, I think you perfectly described the Orlando Magic right there. Great defensive team, positional size and length. Not so great offensively, mostly due to their shooting around their star players.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they get a healthy Knicks team, they're probably not going to win. But the Knicks have been so banged up, that's not even a guarantee. And if the Knicks are down a guy or two, there's definitely a chance Orlando sneaks out. I also think that they can easily win a playoff series. And if there's another upset in the first round, maybe two playoff series, I mean, you never know.
You never know. Last year proved... If last year proved anything, you'd have no idea what will happen in the East.
Nope. And so, I mean, and I honestly think, so I'm not saying he's going to be this good, but Paolo Banchero's play style reminds me of a less athletic LeBron James. He really does play with like that. He handles the ball a lot. He rebounds. He passes. He's just getting so much smarter as a player that this guy's definitely someone I would love to build my franchise around. I believe he's a 1A, and he's going to be that type of player, especially with his shot improving from last year to this year. This is definitely a guy I think can carry your team, and I really like Franz as his number two guy. So between those two and what I think their star power has been, you know, rapidly improving, getting better. It's only going to keep getting better. I think those two are good enough talent-wise to win you a playoff series. And if their defense can be good enough to give them a chance at the end of the game, that's why I like them to have a chance to advance, even without the lack of shooting. Because as soon as this team gets shooting and their young guys get a little bit older, this team is going to be dangerous and they're going to be a contender. And this might be the first step in what I was just talking about in team's contention status as they're getting better. You know, this is their first year in the playoffs. Maybe they win a playoff series and they improve in the offseason and then they start to become true contenders. But, you know, this team, it can definitely sneak up and surprise somebody.
I totally agree, man. All in all, if I'm going to play it safe, I do feel like they're a year away. Mm-hmm. They need to round out their shooting because a team that is dead last in three-pointers made in the NBA is not going to have a lot of success in the playoffs.
Yeah, mathematically, that's tough. Mathematically, that's tough.
You can't keep up. If the Knicks or whoever else they're playing in the playoffs when the time comes gets hot at all from the three-point line, the game's over. Like, it's a wrap. And that's why a lot of NBA games nowadays is just like, you know, team gets up by 30 and then come back, and then the team that was up by 30 ends up winning by 15. And you're like, it wasn't that fun to watch. But they're one of those teams that it really is kind of old school. Get to the free throw line, get to the rim, and just hound you on defense. And that can really give teams trouble, right? Basically the equivalent of the Knicks last year, right? I remember that series when I was all in on Cleveland, and they just let me down because they could only score 70 points a game.
Yeah, couldn't rebound either.
Couldn't rebound. And that is the strength of the Magic. They rebound. They play defense. Whoever matches up with them is going to come out bruised and beaten if they do beat this team, if they can survive. And I am very interested to see where Paolo and Franz can take this organization.
Yeah, and another weakness I feel like Orlando has is kind of, at this moment, the lack of a true point guard who can play make and set up the offense for Franz and Paolo. I know they drafted Anthony Black, and he's actually shot well from three, 40%. Not a ton of attempts, though. He's a 6'7 point guard. He plays off and on some minutes here and there, so maybe he can develop in the future. But this team right now would have benefited greatly from adding, I think, a veteran point guard, a guy Mike Conley type or someone like that, to just come in and set up their guys to get them into the flow of offense. But, you know, with the way the NBA is going, maybe at this point, Paolo is their point guard, like Zion is New Orleans' point guard, like LeBron has been the point guard for years. And, you know, maybe that's more so the future, but I still think they could have benefited from maybe adding another playmaker at the deadline.
I agree. I mean, this team, I wrote down in my notes that they're the equivalent of last year's Minnesota Timberwolves team, or the Minnesota Timberwolves before they got Mike Conley.
Yeah.
Right. It reminds me an awful lot of that. Whereas it just takes that one extra piece that can get their players into the most optimal positions, making it easier for them to score and play make. And they could be a really scary team in the East. They came out of nowhere. I didn't see it. I didn't see them contending for home court advantage. I could see them being a play-in team, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not a lock for the playoffs. I didn't see that. So kudos to them. They really shot out of a cannon as of late.
Yeah, and you know, this team has been really fun to watch. I think they're going to be really fun to watch going ahead in the future. Let us know what you guys think about Orlando. What do you have them doing this year? And possibly in the future, how soon do you think they can be a contending team? Is it next year, or are we looking at 2 or 3 years down the road? If you enjoyed listening, don't forget to follow us on Spotify, check us out on YouTube, leave us a like if you liked what you heard, and let us know your opinions. We like to hear them, even if you disagree. This has been Second Take, and thank you for listening today.